שלום ליהודים, שלום לבני נוער, שלום לגויים. It's the evening of the sixth day, בייס בראש חודש אדר, בייס פרשס פקודי, תשעיין וב, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 10 March 2016, webcasting from the target of world resistance, homicidal resistance to return of the Jews after 18 centuries of exile. Well, the Rite of Blood have become the story, as important from our point of view as the homicidal madness itself. Also how that one death among more than a dozen wounded was an American, Taylor Force, of blessed memory, here to study management. Obviously no anti-Jew and probably a pro-Jew. Having been a West Point graduate, U.S. Army officer put his life on the line against Muslim, maniacal Muslims in Afghanistan and Iraq. By all accounts, a prince of a man, whose pregnant wife was also grievously stabbed by this Arab demon. You all saw the video of this maniac racing down a line of cars stuck in traffic, stabbing one driver after another. This was the tactic used in Gush Etzion one rush hour morning a few weeks or months back when another American, a young Jewish student from Brookline, Mass., was shot dead by a Muslim attacker going after vehicles stuck in traffic. With reactions to this horror, more evidence of the power and spread of anti-Jewitis in our time. There's been nothing like this since the Great War of the 1940s. Eruptions of shameless and hysterical Jew hatred in universities of all places, like those deranged women with appointments as professors in formerly respectable colleges like Vassar and Oberlin. The reactions included NZTV, that is, I guess, the New Zealand equivalent of England's BBC, that posted the following on their website, quote, three Palestinians shot dead by Israeli security forces in three separate incidents, close quote. These were not attempted homicides, according to this media outlet. They were incidents in which the Jews did the killing. No mention of murderous anti-Jews attempting to kill Jews and succeeding. The Guardian in England went even further, I think. The headline there was, quote, three Palestinian youths were shot dead in the West Bank. And never mind that Jaffa, site of the largest horror, is not even inland but on the coast. It is the famous biblical port town where Jonah set sail and was destined to be swallowed up by that whale. And not only that, the Guardian had a subhead that read, quote, the Israelis claim that they were under attack before the killing, but no soldier was wounded, close quote. I wish it were possible to get the staffers at the Guardian, the reporters, the editors, to take a break for an hour or two or three, well, one afternoon or evening, and scan through back issues of the paper printed in the 1930s and 40s, and discover the Guardian as a solid supporter of the Zionist movement when it regularly criticized government policies hostile to the Jewish struggle for a Jewish homeland in mandatory Palestine that the Brits had never let happen, even though that was the mandate from the League of Nations for Palestine that they accepted. In the 1920s and 30s and 40s, Brits would create Iraq and create Jordan, but they never followed through on bringing to life the Palestine that the League had explicitly destined to become the Jewish homeland. I think the current crew at The Guardian might ask themselves, as they peruse back issues, why was there no support for the Palestinians back then, and their allegedly ancient dream of independence? There was no Palestinian people back then, they will discover, other than Jews. Liberals and socialists in that period were pro-Zionist. Not a word about any Arabs called Palestinians in need of a state, and no worrying about their suffering at the hands of villainous Zionists. They would ask themselves what happened, and perhaps wake up to the truth that their classical anti-Jew blindness is quite active in our time. In these headlines and statements, the spotlight is repeatedly on the Jews as killers, with no mention of their homicidal attackers. Leastwise in the headlines. And I would also include in this list of anti-Jew reactions Vice President Joe Biden's response here in the country, visiting. Yes, he firmly condemned the terrorism of the day, The one in Jaffa happened not far away from where he and his family were. But he also said this, and I would not be surprised if an aide presented him with the precise language. He said, quote, "Let me say in no uncertain terms, the U.S. condemns these acts and condemns the failure to condemn these acts and the rhetoric that incites violence," close quote. This was a sop to Israel, because the Holocaust denier, in theory Biden's great white hope for the two-state solution, refused to condemn them. Notice how Biden mentions no name. There's no ethnicity here of those who perpetrate these acts. He does not condemn people, but the abstract failure to condemn them. He doesn't say who's failing, though. Likewise, from the White House, spokesman for the Muslim saboteur in the Oval Office, Josh Ernst, told reporters that the Obama administration expects the Palestinian leadership to condemn any act of terrorism. Notice once again the absence of guilt. Adhering to any man with a name, no demand is made of a leader with a name, but of the leadership, another abstract noun. This is very similar to the standard technique at the UN for decades. Whenever the PLO tried to, and sometimes managed to, slaughter Jews inside Israel, and Israel retaliated against PLO sites in Lebanon, the UN would call for restraint from Israel and other parties. And here is Joe Biden doing the same thing, even as he gives the impression that he sides with Israel, which should not have to suffer these attacks, and he, quote, even condemns the failure to condemn, hint, hint, wink, wink, without saying who's failing at that. He condemns the rhetoric that incites violence, but again, the rhetoric is spoken by whom? Rhetoric without a mouth? Speech without a speaker of this inciting rhetoric in his language? Again, Biden was responding only indirectly to the refusal of the Holocaust denier to condemn the day's three attacks. One dead, five grievously wounded, five more also wounded. We also saw that video of that maniac in Jaffa running and stabbing before being killed. And Abbas, the great white hope, would not condemn this horror. Worse, he and his PA called the demon a martyr after being killed. Biden also played the classic UN gambit when he, quote, urged both Israelis and Palestinians to find a way to move beyond the impasse in the peace process and to resolve the conflict so that could be two states for two peoples. This is a sop to the other side. They hear in two states for two peoples, Judea and Samaria, should be given to them. He called on both Israelis and Palestinians to do something when it's only the Palestinians who are aggressing murderously so. This is horrible, this moral equivalence between murderers and their victims. And in this case, it is a form of anti-Semitism, of homicidal Jew hatred, this equivalence between the people responsible for civilized life and their opposite number, these homicidal, suicidal Muslim maniacs. Biden concluded, quote, "Even though it may be hard to see the way ahead, we continue to encourage all sides to take steps to move back toward the path to peace. Not easy, and for the sake of Israel, and I might add, for the sake of the Palestinians," close quote. I long for the day an Israeli administration protests this pseudo-moral equivalence and does so publicly and angrily. Israel should be a light to the nations, and one of its illuminations might be teaching the Goyim in the UN and in the American administration and in London and Paris that this style of rhetoric is nauseating for its sub rosa smearing of Jews by equating us with these savage barbarians. How dare anyone insult us like this? And as for the Arabs, Israel could shine a spotlight on them by refusing to talk to them, so long as they construe reality as they do. Abbas met with Biden yesterday and complained it was the Israelis who were killing Palestinians. 200 over the last half year, with nary a nod to the truth that every death was in self-defense. Every one, which is the opposite of the fantasies these barbarians tell themselves. PATV reported on the savagery in Jaffa and said those attacked by their martyr were all settlers. 12 settlers were attacked, and by that the audience understands all of them Jews, because the PA considers all Israelis settlers. But don't tell that to the Israeli left, whose own fantasy life tells them the Arabs hate only those living east of the 1949 ceasefire line.
שירו לנו שיר שעד עכשיו היה בדמיון, שיר ציון. הססון שעולה על כל דמיון, שיר ציון. בואו ונשיר את הדמעה של השמחה, כי גדול הצמאון, שיר ציון. הלב שלך לשיר ולרקוד כמו פנס של אור בחושך, תן לו לרקוד. תן ללב שלך לשיר ולרקוד כמו פנס של אור בחושך, תן לו, תן לו ללב שלך לשיר ולעוף ולעוף ולעוף.
Speaking before about the rhetoric of anti-Jew journalists and the U.S. administration's anti-Jew refusal to name names, Israeli rhetoric also needs to examine itself. You saw perhaps how a leader in Uruguay of the Jewish community, David Fremd, Hashem Yikom Damo, died exactly just like a Jew in Eretz Yisrael these days, when a Muslim out of nowhere pounced on him with a knife and stabbed him 15 times and killed him. While, of course, shouting Allahu Akbar. The Hebrew hard copy newspaper Israel Hayom reported that he was active in the Islamic movement. Quote, the background for the murder was nationalistic. Close quote. But then the reportage continued to reveal that materials found in the murderer's house connect him to the radical Islamic movement. Found was a Quran and a computer game in which one, quote, trains oneself how to murder Jews. Not Israelis, not Zionists. In the police interrogation of the murderer, who was apprehended by passersby before the police showed up, he said, quote, I did it because of religion. I hate Jews. My religion tells me to do this, close quote. Well, this is a chronic feature of Israeli life that has driven yours truly up the wall many times. Whenever in Israel a corpse, God forbid, is found with signs the person had been killed, the police say they must investigate to see if the crime was criminal or nationalistic. In the average Israeli mind, when an Arab murders a Jew, it's a product of a conflict between two nations, not two religions. The whole purpose of the Reform Jew Herzl's movement for national liberation was to create a non-religious nation, because he himself wasn't religious. He grew up in the Reform movement. The German Reformers looked upon the German tradition of venerating philosophers like Kant and Hegel and wanted that for themselves. These were not religious figures. The founding German Jews publicly denationalized their Jewishness by claiming they were Germans, albeit with a philosophy based in Judaism, but not bound by it. Herzl's nickname in Israel is Jose Medina, the one who envisioned the state. He has his own Memorial Day in Israel. The National Cemetery in Jerusalem is Mount Herzl, where soldiers, statesmen, and Herzl's remains repose. And so Israelis think that David Fremden, the Montevideo, Yem Shem Yikum Damo, was slain for nationalistic motives because they are deaf to the truth of his murderer, that he murdered for his religion. What the secular Zionists never factored into their utopian dream of a non-religious Jewish state, as if that were possible, was the resistance of the Goyim to their attempt to de-Judaize themselves. And here's why. When the Jews claim, like Marx did, that all religion is bunk, when Judaism, Marx said, was the worst religion of all for bringing itself into the world, and Christianity and Islam, this also sends the message, the Jew, the Zionist, that is, to all Christians and Muslims, that their religion is bunk. Mock the Jews for their religion, and you mock all Christians and all Muslims. And most of them don't want to hear that. The secular may have wanted to shed their Jewishness, but the Goyim are not going to let them. This is why I wrote my book, whose concluding chapter, before the epilogue, deals with the role of the Israeli left in the invention of the Palestinian national identity. And evidence of that can be found in this little news brief from Uruguay, in which the Israeli reporter in Israel sees a nationalist crime, though the murderer himself tells him this is not so. Overall, Israelis are confused by their own identity and that of the enemy. This accounts for some of the reactions to the current terror wave. Finance Minister Moshe Kahlon, who's head of his own secular centrist Kulanu party, said yesterday that the government has to decide right away on expelling the families of these terrorists, and he presented a bill to the Knesset on that yesterday. But notice how he conditioned his proposal. He says the family can be expelled, but only if it knew or helped encourage the terror act or helped a terrorist afterwards. And I say, by adding these conditions, he strips the initiative of its intended purpose. He wants to protect the family of the terrorist if they had no active role in this act of terrorism, which misses the whole point of the expulsion. Its true purpose should be as a deterrent to these aspiring murderers, that regardless of their own behavior, their family will suffer. This formulation wants the accomplices of terrorists to be guilty too in their own right, when the aspiring terrorist has to know that they will suffer no matter what. For sure, the enlightened inside the country and soulmate anti-Jews abroad would howl at such a law, calling it collective punishment, guilt by association. When I say, no, it's mida, can I get mida? Measure for measure. For the death of every innocent Jew, there are friends and families, and even partners and businesses who will be hurt by the act. Kill two Jewish parents of little children, and they become orphans for the rest of their lives. More than the immediate victim suffers. And so when a terrorist strikes at innocent Jews, his victims go beyond the immediate victim. A family is destroyed. So the family of the terrorist must also suffer. When anti-Jews wail about collective punishment, Israel must answer that the ultimate in collective abuse is terrorism. For its bottom line propellant is the belief that everyone in Israel, every person in Israel, even poor Taylor Force, the American visiting here, everyone deserves to die. All are guilty of the crime of existing in Israel, the land that the diabolical Zionists stole from Islam. Terrorism is the ultimate in collective violence, intended to terrorize, in this case, a whole country of people. Israel must immediately, after such brutal, uncivilized violence, round up the family of the murderer and boot them out of the country with the clothes on their backs, and confiscate all their property and give it to the surviving family members of their victims.
היום יום הולדת שמח, היום זה יום כזה שבא לך לבכות משמחה, היום הוא יום בו המלאך לחש לך את שמך. שתצא לדרך ויהיה מדהים, היום גילו לך הכל, היום אתה תבין הכל. היום יום הולדת שמח, יום זה יום כזה שבא לך לצחוק מבושה, היום הוא יום בו המלאך שאל אותך מה איתך, מה קורה לך היום כשאתה בדרך ואתה גדול, היום שכחת את הכל, היום קרה לך הכל. היום יום הולדת שמח,
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. One positive note, late Tuesday night, after the Day of Horror, was the emergency security cabinet meeting, in which the Prime Minister said he was going to complete the security wall around Jerusalem, where work stalled 9 years ago. He said there would be a crackdown as well on Arabs from Judea and Samaria, who are west of the Green Line illegally. Today the police rounded up 250 of them, but that, of course, is not even a drop in the bucket. They say there are 100,000 of them working illegally in Israel, many staying overnight illegally, and so he also promised a crackdown on employers employing them. Most important, though, I think, is the decision he made to shut down Arab media, inciting this violence, which should include all PA media, radio, TV, newspapers. That, of course, would be major and likely to spark an outburst of anti-Jew anger at the UN, in Paris, London, and, of course, Washington. This PM must walk on eggshells so long as the Muslim mole in the White House is there and has the power to harm us greatly. This week, the quisling American journalist of Jewish extraction, Jeffrey Goldberg, from his post in the anti-Jew Atlantic, published possibly his last tete-a-tete with Barack Hussein, in which the president accused the PM of condescending to him, to which Obama reported to Bibi that he was the son of an African-American single mother, but is now living in the White House. He's the president who understands the Middle East and does not need condescending lectures on it or words to that effect. Worse, he also told Goldberg that Netanyahu could easily have cut a deal with the PA for a two-state solution, but chose not to because he felt he was too politically vulnerable, which tells yours truly even more about this anti-Jew, who does not know the Middle East, as Bibi understands, and that's why he lectured him so. And worse, most cynically, he misjudges Netanyahu. If Bibi conveyed to him the impression that he did not understand the Middle East, Obama did not understand, and Obama was offended, here is proof he does not understand the Middle East and misreads the Prime Minister in a very anti-Jew fashion. If he does not understand that the two-state solution means retreating from the high ground and returning to being 9 miles wide and handing over this high ground to the same Muslim maniacs who brought down the World Trade Center, then he understands nothing of Israel and the Middle East and sees in Bibi's resistance to his utopian dream an act of consummate cynicism. Bibi cares only about being elected, and security concerns play no role in his thinking. This is another anti-Jew incapable of human empathy for Jews, surrounded on three sides by hundreds of millions of homicidal anti-Semites. He's so cynical he cannot see Bibi actually cares about this country and wants to do the best for it. In this light, then, the critics of Bibi here at home, for his inability to date to take decisive action against this wave of terror, are also, I think, misplaced. One of the things that gets my back up when I browse the talkbacks is these hot-headed armchair generals calling him a coward who doesn't care. Nonsense. So long as American backing is in doubt, everything we do is risky. If Mike Huckabee, by contrast, were president, we'd have carte blanche to do whatever we have to do to put an end to this knife intifada. It's a reasonable guess that many Israeli businesses now that are dependent on walk-in traffic are suffering. People are afraid to go out. In Jerusalem alone, 20 veteran popular restaurants have gone out of business. These restaurants and the restaurants and shops in Jaffa and Tel Aviv, I think, catering to tourists and Israelis, are also suffering. And worst of all, no one seems to have a clue about how to end this daily bleeding of us. I think a President Donald Trump would be quite friendly to Israel, but because he is ignorant, I think, of foreign affairs and this region, he would be most susceptible to advice from the anti-Jews in the State Department and the CIA and from London and Paris, were he allow Israel to do what is necessary. Which is why, among other reasons, I want Ted Cruz to be the next president. The bright Carly Fiorina has just endorsed him, and that bright and ascetic Mark Levin. In truth, I pretty much checked out of following the Republican primaries last Saturday, and when Trump wanted to reassure his audience that, contrary to Marco Rubio's insinuation, he does have a big you-know-what. I think now American politics has hit rock bottom. I reel when I think that this vulgarian, this scam artist with his Trump University, his gambling casinos, his cheesecake beauty contest, and bimbo wives, is a leading candidate to be a successor to such men as the remarkable and forgotten George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Dwight Eisenhower. We have hit rock bottom. American political life is in the toilet. It makes me sad and worried.
Oh, Abba. Oh, Abba. Ana chaper al chatoteinu. Oh, Abba. Oh, Abba. Slach lanu al avonoteinu. Me'achshav אנו מתחילים להיות יהודים טובים להקשיב לצדיקים שמסרו נפשם עלינו או אבא או אבא אנא הצליח את דרכנו או אבא או אבא אנא הסר כל מכשולנו נעבוד אותך בזריזות בתמימות ובפשיטות ונשמור על האחדות בקרב חברינו או אבא או אבא הטה אוזנך ענינו את נפשנו
Okay, that's it for this evening and for this week. I'll be back, God willing, after the Holy Sabbath. Until then, Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Meharei Yehuda.